Hey, 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 now this is J.R. McNair, Velocity Small Business Radio. We are here in the studio with some amazing people. I'm excited because we have people from all walks of life doing some amazing things. You know, everybody that comes on the show, what you got to understand is that I've personally invited them. So I've met them outside in some capacity, and I felt good enough about these people to invite them on the show. Y'all know I don't bring nobody on the show unless I feel good about it, right? So I brought these people on. They know they're special. They know what they do in the community and how they're helping people. And we want to let you all know how they are helping people. So first off, I want to introduce everybody. Listen, we got Dr. Eric Meriwether here. Why don't you say hello to everybody?
Hello, everyone.
Most definitely. And then we have Mr. Anton Wilson in the house. Hello.
Hello.
All right. Good to see you. Good to see you. And last but not least, Ms. Velma, Dr. Velma Trahan. I had to back that up and say doctor. I had to put that doctor on that. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Most definitely. Most definitely. We're going to get into some great content. All of them are doing some great things here in Atlanta, and I'm so happy to have met them. Doc, we're going to get straight into talking about you. And mm-hmm. when we were talking before, just Go one more time and tell us the titles. You just gave me about four or five titles, and I didn't even know one of those titles. But go ahead and run it down the list again.
Okay, so my duties are that I'm charged with is to be an actor, an author.
Okay.
And I'm also, which I left out that you didn't know or probably do know, is I'm a track and field athlete on the master's side for the United States. So I've been to two Masters Olympic Games and 15 World Championships.
Wow.
And I'm also the executive director of the African American Association of Georgia.
Man, dude, that's a lot.
Yes, sir.
that's good, though. You sound like people always ask me to say, you know what, how do you do all of that? So I'm going to ask you, how do you do it?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and I think the guys can agree here, is passion. Mm-hmm. When it's your passion to do it, then it doesn't cost you anything. It's like you have the excitement for growth. You have the excitement to want to help people and just be you, because you know that you're that key component to do what it is you need to do, not only for your vision, but also the passion that you have inside.
Yeah. So y'all will see in the picture that we take when Doc first came and I started talking to him, I was like, yeah, he looks like he's in shape. And I didn't know that the way that you stayed in shape was for running competitively. I was just like, get on the treadmill, running up, you know what I'm saying? You chasing people. I mean, you know, running and competing with people. That's something.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I was just talking to somebody else. I need to figure out a way to stay in shape. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's a good way to stay in shape, right?
It's a good way. And, you know, I know a lot of people do a distance running, but I think sprinting is really good once you learn how to run, because you use more muscle sprinting than you do distance running. So
you totally do. Circuit training is big. I do that. I run the straightaway and walk the curve.
All right.
Run the straightaway, walk the curve. It does something where it just helps you sweat more.
Right. So when are we going to do a whole lap?
Hey, look, you know, we'll have to think about that. You know, I got to stretch. I was, you know, now we won a state championship, like when I was a senior in high school. But, you know, I went out there with my brother-in-law, and he was trying to, oh, you know, I can get you. Man, I dusted him. But right. on that time, I heard something go pop.
Oh, wow.
I was like, what is that? I never pulled anything. Oh, yeah. And I was out there with tennis shoes on the grass, running with a parachute. And then after that, I said, it's time for me to sit down, because I hurt myself, but it's okay. But look, Doc, listen, so the athlete side. Now tell me about your acting. So in your acting, what do you currently do as an actor? I did a little, I was in a musical and a couple musicals when I was, we actually have a big acting organization in Atlanta called Atlanta Actors Network.
I'm familiar.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Cool. And so tell me about your acting.
Okay, I started acting in 2015. I have a couple of friends that are what I call big time actors. They work with Tyler Perry. They work, one of them is actually on Snowfall right now, if you're familiar with that on FX. So they suggested that I get into acting. So in 2015, I decided to do that.
Oh, wow.
And start taking acting classes. And here within the last year, I've probably landed a couple of gigs. I've done some TV1 reenactment shows, Atlanta Homicide, Fatal Attraction, and For My Man. And then I also just did a animation project with John Amos.
Okay.
So we're waiting for that to be produced and to come out as well.
That is awesome. You know, I was watching Madea's Christmas, and I saw one of my guys there. We used to actually bus tables together in Riverdale at IHOP.
Oh, wow.
And so J.R. Lemon, he's a big actor now. He does a lot of stuff, acting all over the place. But we started out, you know, humble beginnings, bussing tables, smelling like some of everything from IHOP grease. It just wouldn't leave my skin. It just kind of lived there. But yeah, that's great. That is awesome. So I want to talk about, because where I met you at, I met mm-hmm. you. So my friend Evelyn, she ended up inviting me. She's always trying to get me to come out and stuff, because Evelyn is what I call a super connector.
She is
connected to everybody. And she said, JR, come out to my church. We're going to be doing some stuff, and you could come out and help. And I was like, okay, Evelyn, I'm going to come. And so I got around, because I had another event I had to get to that day I was speaking at. So I said, I'll come out beforehand. So I came out, and it was just lines of cars just – from the time that I got there to the time that I left. And Evelyn was like, yeah, so I want to introduce you to somebody. And so she introduced us, and you were the conduit that helped them to put that on there. And you, and this work that you do through the African American Association of Georgia is amazing. Tell us about what, first off, you've been doing this since about 2002.
Correct.
What made you, and what did you do before then, and what was that thing that made you just want to come in and start to doing things to help these people?
That's interesting that you asked that question. I've worked in law firms for about 19 years.
So now you throw in law firms.
I'm just telling you, yes. So I've done legal assistance to partners in law firms, and I've also been a firm administrator as far as running the law firm as well. And just one day I was sitting in church, and this vision came, and God gave me this edifice of this education sports complex that he wanted me to start. I was like, God, you got the wrong person. You got to go get somebody else, because I'm not doing that.
That's right.
You know, and this was like May of 2002. And then in June, the vision came again. And I literally heard the Spirit say to me, if you take care of this, we'll take care of the rest. Mm. So what I'm saying to say with that, once I heard that, I took the initiative to do my own paperwork for the 501c3. Mm-hmm. And I want to put this out here, because this is how good God was to me. I mailed that application off on July 14th, 2002. August the 14th, no lie, I had the envelope back in the mail. So less than 30 days, my nonprofit was approved. Mm-hmm. And that's unheard of, because working in a law firm, it normally takes anywhere, depending on how well you write it, 6 to 18 months to get the IRS to approve a 501c3.
That's correct.
So with that, I gave 2 days to go, 2 days to come back. So 26 days is what I'm saying that it took for me to get approved. And when that happened, that let me know that that's what I was supposed to do. And the wheels just begin start turning, you know. And I already work with a lot of kids and mentor a lot of kids. So I found myself spending lots and lots of money for running shoes and clothing and food. And I was like, okay, this is what I do already. So why not, since it's something that's part of my passion, why not bring everything together and create this organization called the African American Association of Georgia?
That is great.
Yes.
That is great. And so when did you start to really saying, I'm going to do this full time?
I would say, and I think everybody can attest to this, when you first start off, you know that you have the vision, but I think you have to believe it. Even though you know that it's there, you have to believe it, because you have all these people around you saying, oh, that's not going to work. That's this. It's not a good thing. But God didn't give them the vision. He gave it to me.
That's correct.
So I had to realize that it was something that I was supposed to do. And it was a challenge. I mean, I would say, you know, we've been in business going on over 18 years, but I would say it may have taken 10 to 12 years to really get the recognition, to really get the acknowledgement, not only from the people, but from the corporate donors, from the sponsors. It just took a while because, you know, you're new on the block and there's thousands and thousands of nonprofit organizations out here. So there's so many that you have to be compared to, in a sense, that may not be doing the right thing.
Sure.
In a sense. So when you come with what we call the good, good, it's hard for people to believe that it is as great as it is. And it's hard for them to buy in the beginning. But again, the society that we live in, I think connectivity creates the attraction for you. So it's all about who you're connected to and what your process is.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that because they are, and you're totally right. I think that from the point that you were saying, from the 501c3, because it does take that long, we've done and helped almost 600 501c3s get going, and it does typically take that amount of time. So when you got into doing and supplying, a lot of people always look at people now. Mm-hmm. I was just speaking to an individual, and they were like, you know what? It's not really working for me. I said, well, how long have you been doing it? They said, well, for about 4 months. I said, well, 4 months. I said, stay out here long enough. Keep your name out here mm-hmm. long enough. If people can consistently see you, then they will start to believe in you. So for you being in this, and people might say it's an overnight success, but 10, 12 years before you even really get the recognition on that end, to really get the donors that can help and assist, man, that's a lot. And it ends up, you end up having to build the bottom of that glacier. All people right. see is the tip of it.
Absolutely. People don't get to see the blood, the sweat, the tears, the nights at home when you're alone and you're stressed out and you may be crying, you may be going through, because you feel like there's so much pressure there. But everybody knows with purpose, there comes process. So you have to go through the process. And I think a lot of people abort the process. You know, and I'm not saying everybody does, but I think a lot of people have microwave mentality,
sure.
meaning that you just stick it in the microwave and believe that it's going to happen. You press a button for 3 minutes and it's there.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that, because you have to go through that process. You can't elevate if you can't appreciate where you come from.
That's right.
So you have to be able to appreciate where you come from, and allowing where you come from to be a step and not something to collapse the whole foundation from underneath you. So what I encourage people to do when you're going through your process, don't, in a sense, depend on the people around you. Depend on the one that gave you the vision to do it.
That's correct.
And if you depend on him, he says, if you're a good steward over little, then I'll make room for you to have much.
That's right.
And I think people want much and they don't want to deal with the little, but the little will determine how successful you'll be. So if you can handle the little and learn to manage that, manage you, and just be mindful of who you connect yourself to, mm-hmm. I think it gives you the ability to heighten and escalate your brand and who you are as a person.
Totally. I agree. And you spoke about you spoke about talking to people and people saying, hey, this is not going to work. This is not, this will work. Well, you have to look at where you're getting this from. Have these people ever started something? So where are you getting your knowledge from? Are you getting it from people who are on a job, people who've never taken a risk, people who have never failed, you know, people, and then too, people who may have always succeeded? You know, I hate to see if anything ever goes wrong, then what will happen?
Right.
So you have to really put, a weight on who is that person, what mm-hmm. is the context that they're coming from, the environment that they're coming out of.
Right.
And I think that's important. And that puts you in a, so what you're doing with the, we're helping people with hygiene. And, you know, my mother, we fed the homeless and people for 30 plus years, just going out, putting up tents, feeding people. Mm-hmm. That's why I resonated when I saw what you were doing. I said, you know what, this is somebody who I need to talk to, because I really see what he's doing and the impact that he's getting. Why this particular sector and not something else? Why is this special to you?
You know, I kind of thought about that when it came to me, because the name and everything was set to me in the spirit, the African American Association. And I'm like, what? But I thought about connectivity. Mm-hmm. And the reason I thought about connectivity, because I've done my DNA and it says that I'm South African, West African, British, and Irish. Mm-hmm. So that's a combination of many cultures, many races, you know. So it's like there's a connectivity to who we are from all walks of life, whether people will admit it or not. But why are we the group that's so suppressed? Mm-hmm. What is it that's in us that everybody else is afraid of? Mm. And we may not know that they're afraid of that because we're so busy devaluing ourselves. And we can't get mad at someone else. And one thing that I've learned is that I can't get mad at anybody if they treat me the way that I already treat myself. Mm-hmm. So if I want value, I have to value myself first, and then I can attract value to me, versus saying, why are you treating me that way? I say, well, what's in me that's drawing that to me? Because there has to be something there, because it can't be drawn unless it's already in you.
Yeah.
So I think when we deal with this particular group, I want to change the mindset, because when they come to see us, we speak love, we talk love. And of course, you always get knuckleheads in the group, you know, and they always act up in the group, but there's a dialogue that's had when they act up to the point that it gets them under control. And then when we have some of our sponsors there and they witness that, they're like, how does he go from one extreme to the other extreme?
The other. Yeah.
Because if you come at me, I can come back at you. But then, you know, I have to go to the closet.
That's right.
And talk to God. And God said, come back at it this way. And then when I come back at it that way, the person not only apologizes for what they did, but I think it changes the scope of their demeanor on how they interact with people further down the road.
That's great. Mm-hmm. So specifically with hygiene and food, and because the name itself can span in a lot of areas, what made you say, this is where I want to focus?
The kids that I've worked with, that I've mentored the last 20 plus years, and what I've experienced in watching them not have shoes or clothing or food, because a lot of the kids that I work with, they're in single parent homes and it's just the mother. So a lot of times they don't have access to certain things. Even when we travel, mm-hmm. I find myself spending a lot of money out of my bank account to kind of help these kids. And what I wanted to do, because I think in the community we have this certain type of normalcy, mm-hmm. and that has to be changed. It's not okay for you to suffer in silence.
That's right.
And one of the things that I witnessed, we were partnered with one of the schools, Thomasville Heights Elementary. We were mm-hmm. partnered with that school, and I witnessed a conversation with a parent. A parent was calling a child names because the child was a straight-A student. But what we found out the problem was is that the mother was embarrassed because she could not help the child with the homework. And I said, turn that around and realize this precious gift that you have and use that gift to teach you so that you all can learn together and it develops a better relationship between the mother and the child.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I've got to say this. I don't think anybody's parents have ever been able to successfully help them with their homework. And then they do it differently now. They don't even teach cursive. They do division differently. I'm sorry, that's just my two cents.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. That's good.
It's okay, but what I'm saying is that the child had the ability to teach the parent, mm-hmm. and the parent didn't even graduate from high school. So instead of being embarrassed because they couldn't help the child, I'm speaking on communication and having that open communication dialogue that we generally don't have in our households when it comes to the parent not knowing. They'll just say, boy, get out of here with that, or girl, get out of here with that. Ain't nobody got time for that. But at the end of the day, use what's been given to you to even help promote yourself.
That's
versus
right.
being embarrassed about it. Allow the child that you birthed. That should be a treasure for you, that you've birthed a child that's so brilliantly smart that they can come back and not only teach you, but they can go on to do greater things in life because they've helped their mother or father accomplish some things. So when you do something for mother and father that you've never done before, it gives you this sense of confidence. For me, example, my mother did some things during childhood, but I didn't confront her about it until I became an adult. But once I confronted her about it, it released all the baggage from me. And then it made me feel like I can go talk to the president of the United States.
I agree. I had the same conversation with my mother about my childhood not too long ago. And then we have a beautiful relationship.
Yeah. It takes that. I mean, and that's good. I mean, I love that. I love that. And so what you're right now, what is the one thing that you as an organization would like to do and how can we help you do it?
Okay. One of the biggest things now, and I guess this all has to do with our political system that's going on right now. And when everything started with, you know, the new president, it seemed like people were holding on to things closer and they're not sponsoring as much as they used to prior to that. You know, so I found people saying, hey, I'm not going to give as much. I'm going to give less because of whatever this thing that's been created. And I'm not blaming it all on the president. I'm blaming it on mindset. And I think, you know, from a donor perspective, you know, financially was one of the things that we need for the organization because we get product. I mean, we get stuff from Nestle, we get stuff from CVS, Walmart, you name it. We get a lot of donated goods. In-kind goods are easy to get. It's a financial component to keep the operation running, to be able to pick up the goods from the donors, whether it's Feed the Children or Good 360. We have to get transportation to get this product picked up. And we also have to not only take care of our employees that we have, but we like to take care of our volunteers as well because we want them to feel like they are appreciated. So I don't want them to come in and work their fingers to the bone. I want them to know that they're valuable to us, to our success. So I think a combination of even more product donations, but financially would give us the ability to structure some things to create an even flow versus having an up and down kind of roller coaster ride based on economics.
So how can they get in touch with you?
There are several ways that they can get in touch with us through social media. Our website is We're the new age. So just use theaaausa.org.
Okay.
And our Instagram page is AAAUSA Inc. _AAAG Inc. Okay. For Instagram. And for Facebook, it's at AAA USA Incorporated.
That's great.
Facebook, yeah. So just visit our website, not only for donations, but we like volunteers. We like people to come out and just spend time with us because they get to experience the emotional highs that we have when we're dealing with families.
And it's amazing. I've been there. I've seen it. And, you know, he was a young man. You were just helping to get back. Y'all were trying to figure out how to get back home. And we were just sitting there figuring it out. And I was like, man, when I thought about it, I was like, man, that's a lot. That was just one person. Then having to figure out him and you talking about hundreds or thousands of people at a time. That's a lot. So we need to assist you because you're helping people helping to give them the basic needs that a lot of us take for granted. And so I appreciate it and we appreciate it.
Well, I thank you because, you know, the majority that we sell in that we serve in the area that we're in, these are families that lives in weekly motels.
Okay.
And buses come by to pick up their kids to go to school. Mm-hmm. It's a big challenge because they definitely may have the money to pay for the motel or hotel or whatever it is. They don't have the money for the toiletries. They don't have the money for the personal hygiene products. They don't have money for food because they're trying to maintain. And one of the things that, you know, I have to correct some of our volunteers on, the people that work with us, that people drive up in fancy cars. Don't pay attention to the fancy cars, you know, because some of us try to live outside of our means because we want to make an impression on people.
That's right.
Meanwhile, our house is empty with no furniture in it and our refrigerator is empty with no food in it.
That's right.
Because we're trying to maintain this visibility, this appearance for ourselves. Mm-hmm. But again, you can't run from you. So you can hide from the other people, but you can never run from you. So it's like you always have to wear a mask outside of your domain. But if you get comfortable in your domain and be transparent in your domain, then I think success can easily find you. But when you're hiding from success, it can't find you.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's amazing. And on that note, again, I want you to let them know your website address for us.
The website is THEAAA. I think I said three A's, but I'll say it again. THEAAUSA.org. And let me also give you the 800 number, which is 866-305-0572.
Yes, yes. And I'm going to say something, you know, that's phenomenal. And the next person we're going to be talking to, Anton, as soon as he met and spoke to Doc, he said, "I want to help." And that was something that I said, okay, you know, this man that we're speaking to, Anton, has a heart to help people. And that's why he's in the profession that he's in, helping people with their finances, helping people with things that, you know, we weren't taught in school how to really, take care of ourselves financially and do those things. I'm going to get into talking about, and we're going to just be talking about several things, but you had an opportunity to serve in the Air Force for us. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, we appreciate that service, man. Can you tell us a little bit about your service in the Air Force? And
yeah, so I went into the Air Force. I think I signed up when I was 17 years old, ended up becoming an air traffic controller.
Oh, wow.
Funny thing is I had no idea what I was doing when I signed up. I'm coming from poverty as a young kid, being homeless, so on and so forth. The way out, the most successful person I knew was in the Air Force. So, you know, that representation is kind of the model I followed. Joined the Air Force. They asked me, I scored high on the ASVAB, the test you have to take to get qualified to go in. They asked me, what do you want to do? We're giving bonuses for certain jobs. And yeah, give me the list. Go down the right side of the list to see what bonuses I would get. Like, who gave me the most money?
That's right.
40 grand infantry. Nah, I don't want no part of that. Go down a little bit more. Like, what does this guy do? Oh, he flies around and with the things, and you fly into war zones and jump out of planes. Want no part of that. Went down air traffic controller, 30 grand. I'll be the guy with sticks.
Yeah, that's right.
I had no idea what I was doing or what it was really about, or, and you can't control air traffic from the ground with two light up sticks, but that's right. I didn't know any better.
That's right.
I got my 30 grand though.
That's right. That's great. But what he's speaking about too is real, because it's like, hey, when you have a 17-year-old kid coming and saying, hey, I want better, what's going to make the most sense for me based on what I see? And I think that's great. So when you went in, you had an opportunity to.
Wait, before we jump on that to that okay. point, Dr. Merriweather and I were talking earlier about, kids just actually seeing things. You don't know what you want to do until you actually see it. You don't know those things exist.
That's good.
So we get chastised for wanting to be rappers and basketball players and drug dealers and everything else in certain minority communities. But that's all we know. Those are the only people we know we have money. You don't have a Dr. Velma coming in saying, look, you can start your own marketing firm. Dr. Merriweather, hey, you can start your own nonprofit. All we know is the people with the money do these things. I need to do one of those.
That's right. No, that's true. And that's good. And that's why, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's why it's important for mentors. And mentors are so extremely important. And not only mentors, but people that are, when you have apprenticeships, that's one thing I've talked to people about. We don't have any apprenticeships anymore. Everybody has to go the same route, go to college, do those things. That doesn't work for everybody. And just being able to apprentice under somebody and having somebody say, hey, look, this is how you can train under me, or just mentoring somebody and saying, listen, I've been where you are. This is what I'm currently doing. These are the successes and the fruits that I've gotten, but they don't know unless we tell them.
Right. I agree. And a lot of times you don't get that reinforcement from the parents or the household, or a lot of times there might be physical bodies in the household that are parents, but the kids are raising themselves. We talked earlier about our relationship with our parents, and feel free, Dr. Velman, Merriweather, okay. to jump in at any point. I think we all have so much to share, and just in case the question doesn't get asked to you,
yeah,
I definitely want people to get it.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah,
for me, what we talked about, one of the things that I witnessed, and I've been going to the schools and talking about mental health and mental wealth at the schools, and you would be so bothered by what you hear in there. Most of the kids that we talk to, when we start to talk to them about this, they said they don't trust anybody. Mm-hmm. So if they don't trust, they're not going to tell. And they say they feel like when they do tell, they feel like some people don't do what they say they're going to do. And I think they have to know that there's a way, and you can't, and the one thing that I explained to them, you can't put everybody in the same basket. You have to allow opportunity, but I think they have to be able to have something to identify with, like relatable. You were saying. Yeah, something relatable, mm-hmm. because until, like I brought gifts. Everybody gets excited about gifts.
You brought me gifts today?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'll bring you some.
I didn't bring you guys anything. I love you, though.
Yeah, but they weren't talking. They weren't asking questions. So this is the game that I played with them. So the people that raised their hand to ask questions, they got a gift. And when I started that, it created such dialogue. And I'm just saying that to say if we kind of pay attention when we go in, not only to mentor these kids, but talk to them and find out what it is that attracts them mm-hmm. to get that. And once they're in, they're in. I mean, I've gotten Instagram messages. I've gotten phone calls. It's just, it's something different for them. And that's what I hear you saying is presenting something different because they're used to the norm.
Right. It's exposure. I think, you know, a good friend of mine is the CEO of Big Brothers, Big Sister Atlanta. I'm hugely involved with it. I love the guys. I love the concept. Just being a part of something where you can show somebody something bigger than you. With my mentor, this guy had a Mercedes, a Range Rover, a 4-bedroom house. And here I am coming from poverty. I'm like, how do I get that?
That's right. That's right.
But you got to be willing to ask the questions. And a lot of people, to your point, they'll just sit back and just they don't want to be embarrassed because they want more. And you remember, when you're poor, you don't know you're poor because everybody around you is poor.
Yeah, no, totally. No, that's true. My dad used to say that all the time. You know, growing up on the farm, they always had food, and they were staying in a house that had holes in the roof, but didn't nobody know they always ate good? They always, they didn't even know they were poor.
So, you know, the interesting thing, when I found out, I was, my mother married my stepfather. We ended up moving to a house, and, you know, he's from a wealthy family. They have, you know, he worked with his father. His father owns a lot of real estate, and he was just accustomed to a different lifestyle, similar to how we raise our kids. My mm-hmm. kid won't, my daughter won't grow up with sleeping in a car mm-hmm. with me. It just won't happen. So anyway, so we ended up moving to a better side of town. And with that resources and that tax revenue comes better school districts. Mm-hmm. And these kids are taking field trips to Paris and London. And, you know, and I still got that specific behavior that comes from that environment.
Yeah.
And it just took me such a long time to adjust because on the weekends, I'm still spending time with my grandmother,
yeah.
my cousin. So
that's right.
It was an interesting transition. It took me years and years and years to get through.
Well, let me ask you this, because we talked about, and Dot was talking about also, you know, the financial and physical devastation that happens in a lot of communities. One specifically that we actually feel a lot of the impact from, even though it didn't actually come into our community, was when it happened down in Katrina. You know, there's so many people that are here from Louisiana that are here because of Katrina. And, you know, as Georgians and as Atlantans specifically, you know, we open and like, hey, look, come on in, let's make things happen. But you were actually down there doing some stuff. Talk about that song.
Yeah, no worries. So that was actually an interesting and eye-opening experience, and I really got a huge springboard with the relationships I built down there to help me, you know, springboard into other things here in Atlanta. So I actually moved to Atlanta pretty much from New Orleans. Okay. Before that, I was living in London.
Okay.
I'm going to try to make this story as short as possible.
Okay.
So we're in London. Apparently, somebody's on a train. I'm in London just hanging out. I'm running out of money because, you know, the pound. I couldn't get a job there because I'm an immigrant, technically, so on and so forth. I'm making an argument. I'm an American. I could do whatever I want.
That's right.
Once again, I'm 20-some years old and ignorant.
Yeah.
So lady picks up. Lady says something like, what do we care about America? They don't care about us. She throws down the paper. I pick it up. They're talking about Hurricane Katrina. I had no idea. You know, when you're in other countries, you tend to get their news.
That's right.
And so it's, I didn't really, you know, understand what was going on. Got a call from my cousin 2 days later who just passed. Anyway, so we got a call from him. He said, hey, man, I got a job down in New Orleans. You need to come back and we need to go down there and get it. So I said, okay. So I bought a ticket, flew back to New Jersey where my car was at a friend's house.
Okay.
At this time, I didn't realize that I'm broke. You know, I probably got $100 in my name.
Yeah.
And when I think I left, I think gas was maybe, what, $1.26. I came back, it was $7 a gallon.
It really was like that, really.
So drove back to North Carolina, pick him up. He's like, hey, I got a friend with me. I'm like, okay, so we got somebody else that we're going now. We get down to Atlanta. So it's halfway between North Carolina and New Orleans. We get down to Atlanta. He's like, we're going to get some gas. Oh, all of a sudden, my cousin, he's like, yeah, I don't have any gas money. I spent my money on beer and snacks getting down here. Hey, what about your friend? You don't have any? No, he doesn't have any money either. Long story short, we end up in New Orleans with, I think we had $15 between the three of us.
Wow.
Less than a quarter tank of gas, so we weren't going anywhere.
Nah. You had to make
and
it work.
And the job that he had, it was one of those situations where he was doing some day labor jobs up in North Carolina, and he had it set up. He said, hey, there's a labor finders in New Orleans. I've met labor finders here. They telling me I could transfer anywhere in the country. So we pull up to the address, and the building is blown down and blown up and blown over. So long story short, we were put in a situation where we had to make things work. We had to make things happen. And I remember Haywood, my cousin that I came down with. So we ended up sleeping in a car because there's no place to stay. The only place that had access to these hotels were the major companies that brought in workers. We get down so long story short, walking around all day, we're just asking people who are working, do you have a job? Do you have a way for us to make it? Blah, blah, blah. We end up getting jobs working at the VA hospital. From there, I ended up springboarding, getting another job at a nightclub. I saw a guy who was well-dressed. He walked in with another group of guys in suits. He had swagger. He had, you know, charisma. I just went up to him. I said, hey, I just moved here from New Orleans. I'm looking for help. I mean, I want to get to meet some people. I want to, you know, learn how I can make my way in this city. And that guy, you know, even though our differences today, he really helped me out a lot. He took me under his wing and showed me around. Had no idea who he was at the time. He ended up being the on the Bring New Orleans Back Commission, on a lot of other initiatives in the city. He owned a marketing firm, which, you know, later I ended up going to work for him at. And it kind of springboarded off that.
That is awesome. That's a great story.
I tried to shorten it.
Yeah, no. That's a great. So then from there, how did you get into financial advising?
Yeah, another story. So, okay. So it's that thing where, you know, it's funny. I hear one of the reasons I'm able to get a lot of clients and connect with people is because I'm authentic. I'm genuine. Sure. I don't cater to your ego. I don't. Sometimes we're just not a good fit, and I don't care if you got $50 million. We're not a good fit. You know, you're just going to annoy me. Like, we're not going to work out. But I have a happy practice that way.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I got into this business. So I ended up working for the marketing firm, you know, a couple of other firms there, doing doing mechanical engineering, project management for there. 2008 hits. You know, it's companies are scaling back. Smaller businesses are going out of business. As a young man, I was making good money. So I probably had, to me, 50 grand at 20, maybe 6, however old I was at the time. Like in the bank, I was balling. I come from poverty. I've been balling all this time, and I still managed to have like 50 grand in the bank.
That's right.
So what I didn't know how to do was cycle down my lifestyle, and Bourbon Street can be a monster. It's like one compacted Atlanta where you could just be out every night.
That's right.
Doing too much.
That's right.
So didn't know any better. Had a great time. Ran out of money. Just couldn't get a job. You know, my 26-year-old, 27-year-old ego had me. I can get a job. I'm the boss. I do whatever I want to do. You know what I've done in my life?
Yeah.
You just don't know any better. You don't have any OGs. Like, you don't have anybody around to tell you any better.
That's right.
Long story short, end up moving back to North Carolina to a property the family had. Now, mind you, when I say that, it's not furnished. Just sleeping on the floor on a cot. And I had Wi-Fi, though. So every day I'm applying for jobs. And it gets to that point. I don't know how many of you guys actually been on a real, real job hunt. But you just start applying for everything. If they call you back and leave a voicemail, you don't answer it. You listen to what the job is. Go learn about the company. Then try to figure out how you can apply your skills to what they do.
That's right.
And act like you've done it before. So you're talking about like 6, 7, 8 months of that. I got exhausted. I was looking for jobs in Charlotte, Atlanta, New Orleans, Raleigh, North Carolina, wherever I could find it, because I was going to make it happen. You know, that the passion that Dr. Merriweather talked about. I'm not going back to poverty. You know, people are motivated by two things, fear and greed. And fear is the most powerful one. And I like eating every day these days.
That's right. That's good.
No, I'm so serious. It's like every day, like, what's the best thing about your job? You know, you make good money. I can eat every single day, whatever I want, whenever I want.
That's right.
I'm happy.
That's good. And there's simple things like that that just puts it over the top for you. Like, that's right.
And I'm so programmed. Like, you know, I still wait till the gas light comes on to get gas.
Yeah. Like,
don't feel bad.
I can't do that. No, the gas light. No, I think, cause, you know, and another thing is I'm so busy and so efficient that it's inconvenient to stop and get gas.
That's right. That's right.
So my next, I'm actually looking at Teslas right now just simply because I'm lazy and I don't want to, you know, they don't have brake changes. Not a Tesla advertisement, but you guys can send me a check. They don't have brake changes. They don't have oil changes. You don't put gas in it.
You don't pay for fuel. It's free.
Yeah,
right.
Just
get it and go.
Just go, right?
But what about the hour to charge at the charging station?
Yeah, how long?
I charge at home.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
It makes me know, never mind. And you know, everywhere we go here in Atlanta, we're such a metropolitan city, we've got chargers everywhere.
They do have. I was at IKEA, and they had three of them there right next to the
expecting. But that's not a supercharger. Oh, like for the supercharge, it takes about an hour to charge it fully. But if it's not a supercharge, it literally takes about 10 hours.
Really? 10 hours. Wow. Okay.
I do it overnight or I'll do it on my, I'll just play on my phone. I thought about that when you're taking like an over the thing trip. I'll go walk around, go shopping and go eat something.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's good.
Let me finish with this story, right? So I got a friend up in, it's funny, he just moved down to Atlanta, Armand Little. Anyway, so I have a friend up in New Jersey. He's like, now I'm really, really, really broke. Like, yeah. So, but it was no unfamiliar territory.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, move up here to Atlanta. No, he said, hey, move up here to Jersey. You can stay with me in my house till you get on your feet. And there you can look for jobs because apparently they take 2-hour train rides to work. You look for jobs in New York, Philly, New Jersey. You know, you'll make it happen. Great friend. We went to air traffic control school together, too. And long story short, get a call back from, I'm calling up there. I'm calling companies, blah, blah, blah. I remember running across on Craigslist on the list, a job that said stockbroker. I call her. I was like, yeah. I mean, you think they hire stockbrokers on Craigslist? He said, heck no. But what do you got to lose? I said, good point. Sent my resume to all stockbrokers firms. They called, all of them called back, left voicemails. So then I started doing research on what it was to be a stockbroker. Found out it was synonymous with financial advisor. You know, it's the beautiful thing. You know, when we were younger, we had to go through the encyclopedia. We didn't have instant access to anything we want to know at our fingertips.
That's right.
So
that's
powerful. Yeah, it is. I had instant access to everything I wanted to know at my fingertips. So I realized that you could be anywhere and be a financial advisor due to computers, so on and so forth. I really wanted to be in Atlanta at the time. So I looked up every firm, financial advisory firm in Atlanta, find out how their email addresses were formatted, find out the name of the people that were in charge. Because, you know, everybody has the same thing, whether it's first name dot last name or first initial last name. All you got to find out is whatever their .com is, that's usually connected to their email address.
That's right.
I sent my resume out to every firm, to everybody. I didn't know at the time that was called prospecting, and they loved it. So firms started calling me back.
Yeah.
So I would drive from North Carolina, 7 hours, interview. I remember literally changing into a suit on 285. I'm not that flexible these days, but literally driving down the road and changing into a suit. Do the interview, drive 7 hours back.
Wow.
Like 3 days later, I got a call from another firm that was in Atlanta. They're no longer around. Drove down, interviewed again. And they just loved my, and when I told them I was driving down 7 hours, they just loved that, the passion. And I'll say this, I was telling Dr. Merriweather earlier, one of the real things I really liked about you when I met you was just your passion for what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Your energy, it's authentic, it's genuine, it shows how much you care about what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So if I am looking to be in an incubator, I want to be in your incubator because I feel like you care about me.
That's right. Well, I appreciate it. And I think it's about, like you said, authenticity. That's something that's real. I mean, when we look at across the board with everybody that we're dealing with in the world, people know real and people know fake. They can feel it. Mm. Take it. And so where you could, where, you know, before people, they would be out here saying one thing or doing something. It's like, man, you know, now people, they know are authentic. And that's why we tell people, be authentic, whatever that is. Okay. If you like eating peanut butter and pickles, then that's you. You know what I'm saying? Just do that. I'm just saying, right? I'm, you know, be you. That's cool. You know, like I can, you know, I can see how that could be cool. But I'm just saying, whatever that is, be your authentic you.
You're right. I met one of the best relationships I've ever met, just being myself. So I'm at the cigar bar, and this guy, you know, I don't know him from Adam. He hears me talking to some people about like my thoughts on how we look at money. I think I was on a rant about, and I do mean a rant, about how we shouldn't pay for our kids' college before we run our retirement. And I was just on a rant about that. He calls me over. He's like, what do you do? I'm like, I'm a financial advisor. He's like, let me ask you something. He says, if I got a couple hundred grand and I gave you some money, how much do you think you can bring me back in the market? I said, I don't know. And anybody who tells you they do are lying.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
We just ended up in a long conversation, find out he was a C-suite executive at a publicly traded company. He had a lot more than a couple hundred grand. We just had a beautiful, beautiful relationship. And even to this day, we still communicate. We share advice. He gives me referrals. It's a great relationship. But it came from me being authentic, where everybody else in my business was inauthentic. And like you said, it's fake. And when you're dealing with someone's money, they want to know that they can trust you.
They want to know that they can you can be real with them. So talk about your company that you're currently with. And how is it different? And how outside of the authenticity that you bring, that's one of the things that makes Anton Anton. But Anton could be anywhere and shine. But what made you choose where you currently are?
Okay, another true story. So I was gonna go to another major firm. So I'm at a big major. I started off independent, went to a big major. Honestly, like, I wasn't even thinking about switching until I started bumping heads with someone. It's, you know, not everybody likes authenticity, especially some Dr. Velma said earlier, especially when they're insecure. So what happened was we started bumping heads, and somebody just happened to call me at the right time and say, hey, I'm with this major, major firm. We're going to give you XXXXXXX amount to come over if you bring this amount of assets. I said, that's more money than I've ever had at one time. Mm-hmm. Great deal. So we started having a conversation, and then I ended up running into one advisor that just, he was trying to introduce himself to me. I didn't feel his energy, and it just kind of set the tone for how I felt the rest of that firm would be. At that very same time, I got a call from another major firm, and they offered me a little bit less of XXXXXXXX, but the environment was better. I felt like I can grow and be stable and really prosper there, and I feel like the people that I was introduced to, they would allow me to be me, which, given my industry, I'm that's one of the things I tend to struggle with, because, you know, you either like me or you don't.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think I don't ever try to fit a square peg in a round hole. If it's not a fit, it's a fit. And one thing I'll say is this. I want to talk about these two last things before we get off with you. Number one, you said you're a big Carolina Panthers fan.
Yeah.
That's right. So, okay. So
why we got to go there?
Well, listen, because
I had great seats, though.
Because, listen, I am a fan also.
A Panthers?
So I'm a Panthers fan.
I knew I liked you.
Yeah, right? And the reason why is one of the reasons I went to Wofford College, and the training camp for the Carolina Panthers is Wofford College. The reason why it's the training camp for the Carolina Panthers is because one of our greatest alumni, Mr. Richardson, founded the Carolina Panthers. And so we got to serve on the board of trustees together. And he's a phenomenal man. And he's given so much to our school. I mean, gave us so much money to build our Richardson, the new state-of-the-art basketball, volleyball facility, which is phenomenal. And so, but I've known him for years, his family and everything there. And I get to admit, we were in camp in college. So we would have our dorms like right next to the Panthers dorms. And so they would come in at nighttime sometimes, like waking us up with stuff, you know, just being crazy. Right? And so, but we had a lot of great experiences with the Panthers. So
I got to ask you, so how do you feel about him having to sell the team and the whole fiasco that surrounded it?
Well, you know, not everything that we see is communicated in the media. You know, all I can speak of is me knowing him personally. And so one of the best men that I have known and that I've had the pleasure to speak with, I mean, I've only, he speaks with his pocketbook too. You know, I mean, he gives a ton of money, a majority of his wealth. He's given a lot of it away. His family's done some phenomenal things. So, you know, in our society, we have a tendency to push out things in a lot of cases that are one-sided viewpoints. Now, I'm not there. I don't know. I can't speak. But all I'll know is that he's a good man, and he's done some great things to help people. So that's all I can speak. And plus, he helped found on one of my favorite teams, which is the Carolina Panthers.
I can respect your adult opinion on that. Like, I think sometimes we jump on whatever's on the media, and then we just go right into that. And that's now my belief. And whatever media you tend to consume tends to be your belief on things and people. And I think you should be a student of multiple sources of media.
You know that he was the only NFL owner to actually play in the NFL?
I did not know that.
Yeah. Wow. So he played. So his story, he was played at Wofford, and he was a wide receiver, tall man. And so even I mean, 6'5", 6'6", 6', I mean, he's tall. So, you know, they get above 6'5". I'm like, oh, I can't really gauge how tall you are. But anyway, so, you know, just a, but he has a very, a good presence. But he came out of the NFL, I mean, came out of college straight for the, it was the Baltimore Colts. And went in, played for 3 years, and walked away from the game and started these Carl's Juniors and Hardee's and stuff like that, and then became a billionaire. And then they came back and said, hey, you know, we want you to start this expansion team. And he's like, well, I'm your guy. And, you know, fast forward years later, we had the Carolina Panthers and Cam Newton's and the and, you know, everybody from there. So no, I love the Panthers. I get to go up and see them when I can in Spartanburg. Okay. for training camp. I still have to catch it to a home game. I haven't been in a while, so I have to go up there. But I'm a Falcons fan now. Understand this.
You got to choose a side, so man. Look, you can't really flip-flop on
that. I'm in agreement on that.
See, look,
right,
see, I'm a Falcons fan now. Don't get it twisted, but I love the Panthers, too. You can have one more than one team.
No, you can't. Not they're in the same division.
Yeah, right, right.
Can't have it. You can't.
Well, look, I tell people all the time, I cheer for the Panthers except for when they play in the Falcons, and I got to cheer for the home team. So,
that's fair enough. I'll accept that. So
the last thing is, you know, one thing when I met you also, your family and specifically your daughter is very important to you. And so that was something that when we talked, I was like, man, you know, I could just really tell how much your daughter means to you. Can you speak about?
Absolutely. I love my daughter. It's just, you know, it's easy for me to show, given how I was brought up and the parenting I had, it's easy for me to love my child because I could just, I know she knows this, but I do the opposite of what was done to me.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's easy. It's an easy thing. Now, it's the other relationships I tend to struggle with because, you know, I have no concept of that.
That's right.
But as far as my daughter is, she's the world to me. And, you know, just instilling things in her now. Like, she already knows how to count at 2 years old, do her ABCs. I'm trying to teach her how to trade stocks. So we're going to get there, but, you know, we're getting there.
That's awesome. So tell people, how can they get in touch with you? If they want to reach out to you to say, hey, how can I get in touch with you? How can I, you know, just get to know you or potentially do business with, how can they do that?
So if you call my office phone, I probably won't answer. I just don't answer my office phone for some reason because anybody who really knows me, anybody who really wants to get in touch with me will text me. Instagram's a great way, A-N-T-A-N, Wilson, W-I-L-S-O-N. Facebook, I'll check that every now and again. And those are really the best ways. So my Instagram is honestly the best way to – it's almost become like a new text message service. Like, hey, what's your number? Just give me your Instagram.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
A part of that is because I want to see what your lifestyle is like. Like, are you on the corner begging for money in your pictures? You're probably not going to be a good client for me. Let me get a concept. And, you know, another thing, and I know Dr. Velma's going to get
– Velma, right? I'm so sorry.
I know she's going to get in this. But the brand that you put out there, that follows you these days.
No,
and so
it does.
You really have to maintain your brand. I made it a conscious effort to really put out there what I wanted people to know about me. I wanted to be that relatable advisor.
That's right.
So long story short, Instagram is the easiest way to reach me if I don't know you. If you don't have Instagram, LinkedIn,
yeah,
just Google, just search my name, A-N-T-A-N Wilson on LinkedIn, or just my website. Everything is A-N-T-A-N Wilson, and there's not a lot of me's.
Yeah, that's great. So, I like it. I like it.
So I made a conscious effort to make my daughter. Yeah, that's it. I made a conscious effort to make my daughter's spelling of her name unique.
Yeah.
To give her the same initials.
Yeah.
And everything, because I don't know. That's how I'm going to be immortal.
That's right. That's great. That's great. No, we pass it on. I like it. I like it. I like it. And on that note, I'm going to move over here to Dr. Velma. How you doing, Doc?
I'm doing great.
You doing good?
This morning, so that's more than enough for me.
That's great. That's great. Listen, you know, we're just gonna keep rolling with it. We gonna let Dr. Trahan close us out here with some great information. So I was introduced to you through a great person, you know, who does some amazing work here in Atlanta. And she mentioned you, and she said the great things. She was very impressed with you, and I said, you know what? I have to meet her. And so we got on a quick phone call, and you said, hey, well, and I said, were you in your office? She said, I'm in my office. I said, well, look, I'll be there in 30 minutes. So we drove over and sat down. I think we sat down for about two hours plus and just talked. We had a lot of great things in common, and I ended up seeing that, you know, your passion for helping other people was something that's really big. Talk about you wanting to help people and why that's important to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was brought up in extreme poverty. Mother was a drug addict, and the majority of my family members were alcoholics, and it was the norm to not have. And so I knew that there was something better out. I knew that there had to have been something greater. And for me, I knew that in order to see that change, I had to become the change first. Mm-hmm. And so I made a conscious decision to change the trajectory of my life and my future through first taking change, doing change, and implementing things myself. And so coming from Houston, I moved here 3.5 years ago, and I was led by the Spirit of God to go. And oftentimes we are comfortable in our positions, and we don't embrace that go moment so that we can actually get the best of our lives and what we're actually placed on this earth to do, which is solve problems and which is to be of service to other people. And so with all of the things that I've actually been through, I started my entrepreneur journey very early. My first 3 companies failed, and I decided that I wasn't going to stop. So 4th company was successful, 5th company was successful, and now this is what I do for other companies, is help them to be successful. So building scalable business models. And one thing I've realized in the process is that there is a mindset. Poverty is a state of mind. Mm-hmm. And if we don't change our mindset, then we remain in that state of mind. And so a lot of people, you know, they talk, Eric and, you know,
and Antoine,
both talked about poverty and talked about just the state of authenticity and what colleges are not teaching our youth. It's all about really empowering the next generation of leaders with practical knowledge. The Bible tells us that our people perish for a lack of knowledge, mm-hmm. and that where there is no vision, the people perish. And with that, how do we give this knowledge to our next generation of youth so that when we're not here, our children's children is set for life and mm-hmm. don't have to go through what we've went through. And so that's why it's very, very passionate for me. I'm very purpose-driven for that reason.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you spoke a lot of great things, you know, being able to, when you feel like it's time to move, and even if people say if it's not broke, you know, then why fix it? Sometimes you need to break it because it needs to be better. Or sometimes you might be in a position where you're good, but good is the enemy of great.
Right.
And so sometimes in order to get to great, you have to get out of your comfort zone and go into other areas. So, you know, you're just coming from Houston to Atlanta and really in not really a long time, really have been able to make some amazing things happen. How did you do that? Because a lot of people come here from other places and it just doesn't really hit that fast. What did you do different?
So the first thing I did was I went on a spiritual fast. Went on a 40-day fast.
Wow.
Because I knew that I was going to have
Of what kind of fast?
I only had water mm-hmm. and vegetables.
Okay. Oh, wow.
For 40 days.
Oh, wow.
I knew that I had to be intentional because if God led me out of Houston, he was going to have to give me the next directions of what I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so fasting was the very first thing. And the second thing is, you know, being able to see through a lot of clutter, a lot of BS. You know, Atlanta is an amazing city,
mm-hmm.
but there's also a lot of red carpet stuff and a lot of, you know, things that are happening that if you're not intentional, then you will get burdened with a whole lot of other stuff. And so if you're not very clear of what your vision is, so for me, I know what my vision is. I know if it's to end poverty through entrepreneurship, I need to be very intentional with the people I associate myself with.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be very intentional about my prayer life. I need to be very intentional about the events that I go to, the things that I watch, the stations on the radio that I listen to. And so when I became very intentional about my destination, I knew that anything that came toward me that did not add value to that would ultimately take away. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things that I definitely embraced.
That's awesome. And so we're going to get on to talking about your nonprofit organization, but I want to put it in context. So people, we spoke about earlier how there's a lot of, when you go to college, a lot of times, reason why I didn't decide to major in business, I didn't want to learn from somebody that didn't actually do it in the real world. So I said, you know what, let me find a different major. One thing that I like about you helping and assisting these entrepreneurs is that you have a company yourself and that you operate. And you said that that fifth, sixth company that you're now greatly successful at. Talk about what that company does and what was the difference that just hit and those other ones didn't.
That's great. So the company that I'm the founder and CEO of now is called ThinkZilla Consulting Group. And we are a brand engagement firm. We help purpose-driven organizations connect to communities. We help purpose-driven organizations build their internal content strategies to connect with different audiences. And through ThinkZilla, in November, we made 7 years. And
congratulations.
I'm really excited about that. But what I'm really excited about with ThinkZilla is the growth that we have been able to accomplish with helping businesses. So NASCAR is one of our clients. Fiji Water is one of our clients. University of Phoenix. And being able to show other business owners how to get certified mm-hmm. and do business with the government, how to do business in the private space, and really how to build the right type of business models and revenue structures to scale your businesses. So, and they didn't teach me that in school. So I did major in business, but I didn't learn that in school. My professor had never owned a business. So
that's right.
It was a whole lot of stuff, you know what I mean? And I just feel like, you know, where I learned what I've learned is through going through the storm, you mm-hmm. know, going through it, learning, failing, and figuring out, okay, this is what I've learned. This is what I don't need to do next time, or I've learned. So, transitioning into ThinkZilla, the reason why I think that we're wildly successful is because we have that practical knowledge. We know what works, and we know how to build things from grassroots. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of people are missing. We have a lot of academically intelligent people, but we don't have a lot of wisdom and grace. And I think grace and wisdom is so important. If you don't have the wisdom and the grace upon your life, it doesn't matter how many degrees you have. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to work. I know mm-hmm. a lot of people with degrees that are homeless.
That's right.
I know a lot of people with degrees that have never seen $1 million in their lives. Mm-hmm. And so we have to really begin to change the trajectory of how we actually see life mm-hmm. and really, really honing in on what success looks like.
That's right.
What do we want our children to have? You know, and so to answer your question, I didn't learn anything. You know, I love you, Texas Southern University, you know, but again, I didn't learn what I know now from college.
From college, that's right. And so when you got in your business and you were doing that, you know, having, what was the thing that was a difference maker in those first three that made the next one successful? Was it just a culmination of what you learned to avoid, or what was the thing that you can give a jewel or a nugget maybe that will help somebody else that say, you know what, I've failed more than a couple times, and I'm and you know, everybody's telling me that, you know, I need to go and get a job, but what is the difference? What can they do? What did you do, and what can you tell them?
Absolutely. The first thing has a lot to do with maturity.
Mm-hmm.
I had to grow up, and I also had to become an authentic version of myself and not allow people to box me in.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes people try to box you in, you know, family, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Well, when I began to tap into my spiritual gifts, I realized that I can't allow people to box me in. So number one, is not allowing people to box you in. Number two is being authentic. I'd rather be an authentic me than a cheap imitation of someone else. There's already enough of people that are trying to be like other people. Mm-hmm. So the world needs original people, people that are here to solve problems. And then the third thing is, I realized that in my first couple of companies, I was looking at how much money I could make. But I changed that into looking at the problems that I can solve. So I no longer go into situations based on the money that I can make, rather than how can I solve this problem.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I have a book that I'm coming out with, because I would sit in places where I would see people chasing opportunities. They would be chasing opportunities instead of solving problems. So our book is called Solving Real Problems. And I saw that because I saw a lot of people, they were like, oh man, you know, I can, this is what's hot. I'm going to do this because I can make money at it. I can do this because I can do this, or this is the hot thing and I need to move on this. And that's cool when everything's going well, but when it's not, what's still there to drive you? And not only that, but if you are if you don't really understand really the problems that you're solving, you can't really connect with your target audience base. And you know, when we talk about those target audience bases, and really just the name of your organization, okay, that's kind of talking about, first off, is putting us in a mindset of saying, you need to bring yourself to the mindset of a certain level of income. Because Millionaire Mastermind Academy, this is where, and I like names to where it's, in the name, it's pretty much explaining what it is. So, hey, if you want to get to a point to where you're a millionaire or masterminding with other millionaires or people that are achieving to have that status, this is where you need to be. Talk about that organization, when you started it, what prompts you to start it, and where it is today.
Absolutely. So I started the Millionaire Mastermind Academy. Well, when I started it, I didn't even know that it was going to turn into an academy.
Okay.
At the time, I was December of 2017. I heard the Spirit of God say, Velma, it's time for you to impart some of this wisdom to other women. You cannot just sit on this information. And for me, I was like, well, I'm new to Atlanta. Why do anybody want to hear anything that little old Velma have to talk about anyway? And so I did it. In my first mastermind, I had about 32 attendees. And I continued to do the mastermind events every single month. And I saw how rapid they were growing. So to fast forward, about 4,600 women have come through these mastermind groups every month. We have about 200 women that come to hear me speak. And it's not me. I it's the gift, okay? And this is one of the things that we have to do more of, is tapping into our gifts. Because even when your enemy, when your enemy don't like you, if you have a gift, that's what they want. And so in saying that, every month we've been doing these Millionaire Mastermind events. Women fly from everywhere, and then a lot of leaders come to the events to hold mastermind, fireside chats to help the women get from point A to point B. And it's amazing because we've been able to see some of these women that are transitioning from corporate to start successful businesses, and aspiring entrepreneurs that are looking to become entrepreneurs, of course. And, you know, it's just amazing to be able to see how they're growing and how they're progressing in life, and how they're changing, or they've changed their mindset. It's amazing to, what I hear a lot is, we don't see a lot of business events incorporate prayer. Well, mm-hmm. I believe you cannot take prayer out of business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is the number one thing that is needed in order to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, for me, I thought it was normal. But I'm still learning that it's not normal, because that's the first thing I hear is like, wow, I can't believe that you actually pray publicly. Well, the Bible tells us is what we do publicly, God will reward us. So and so that's, you know, and being authentic.
I was just about to say that it gets back to authenticity. you know, for you to do something else in our society, there's not a lot of true individuals. There are people that say they're individuals, but they're not really individuals. They really, you know, follow what everyone else does. And that's cool if you're just trying to not stand out. But if you want to, you just got to do you and be original. And I think that's something that's, that attracts people. It pulls people to you.
And to your point, you're absolutely right. And I remember when I first got to Atlanta, it was someone told me, they said, "Velma, Atlanta is oversaturated. Why did you come here?" And I said, "Well, you know, the Spirit of God led me here. So clearly there's an assignment for me to do here." And she said, "Well, I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't have star power, you're not going to be able to make it in Atlanta." And I said, "Well, wow, if that's all I need, I have that because yes. God is my star."
That's right.
So I knew that I was going to be successful because that's right. My star.
That's right. That's right.
And so for me, it's normal, but other people see it as bold. And so I'm still learning that, you know, we really have to be authentic versions of us. It's people in the corporate world that are going to work every day. And they don't even want to go to work. They don't even want to be there. They're not living their life on purpose and in purpose. Mm-hmm. So why don't we change our mindset and tap into this thing that we really have deep down on the inside of us and conquer greatness together? Like what we're doing, we're all here. And you're super amazing as well. Like, I just think that God has some great things in store. And as we enter into a new year, I'm looking at it as not just a new year, mm-hmm. but this is a new decade.
That's correct.
And so this is serious. It's personal to me.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And that's amazing. And going into this new year, and this you are going to get ready to have actually a week from today, you are going to have an amazing event, and it's your summit. Okay. And I want you to talk about that summit. And if you all have not looked at this summit, she has people coming from everywhere, all different type of people. There are going to be some major movers and shakers at this summit, people coming from different states. A lot of the movers and shakers here in Atlanta are going to be there. You know, I'm going to be in attendance, so y'all will see me there. And so it's just a lot of good people that are going to be there. Talk about this and talk about it's an all-day event. It's going to happen in Atlanta. And talk about it. Tell people what they can expect at this event.
What's absolutely. The website?
So the website is MillionaireMastermindAcademy.com.
Okay.
And then when you go to that, just press Entrepreneur Summit, and then you'll see.
You want it now.
Awesome. So it's the 2019 Millionaire Mastermind Academy Entrepreneur Summit. We are honoring women that have taken strides through the Millionaire Mastermind Academy and that are getting things done. And with that being said, one of the challenges for most entrepreneurs is they feel that they don't have resources or they don't know what they don't know. And so I wanted to create a program that could connect these entrepreneurs to leaders and decision makers. A lot of the leaders and decision makers, they have the resources, but they cannot necessarily touch the entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And the reason they can't is because the tonality is different. The corporate people that they have writing these programs out to target the entrepreneurs aren't reaching the entrepreneurs because everybody in their ecosystems are corporate people. Mm-hmm. So an entrepreneur that relates to other entrepreneurs know the struggles and know the problems that other entrepreneurs are having. And so since I've been able to work on both sides in the corporate and in the entrepreneur realm, I can merge the two. I can marry the two. So we have a full day of programming. We actually have an HBCU lab where the youth will be able to partake in this lab at no cost. And we have experts that will be leading that lab, Wise Intelligence. He's the president of the Rap Snack Foundation, all of the Rap Snacks and Walmart and all of these organizations. We have BB&T Bank that is presenting an access to capital workshop. We have Stacy Key, who is the CEO and president of the Georgia the National Minority Development Council. We have Leona Barr Davenport, president over the Business League, Nancy Flake, the Urban League. And today, I'm so very, very grateful that we actually just had Jocelyn Dorsey. She's the former Channel 2 director of public affairs, and she was the first African-American news person. I'm like, wow, for Channel 2, the first African-American anchor of Channel 2 newscast. And so that's big. And she's also the first African-American news anchor in the Atlanta market. So to be here just 3 years and to be able to have this support, it lets me know that the seeds in which I've been sowing over these last 2 years, sowing into these women at no cost to them, the reward is coming. And so I'm really excited about the summit. So it's a full day worth of programs for people that are looking to do business with the government, do business in the private space. They'll be able to get knowledge on that. You know, people that are transitioning from corporate into entrepreneurship and don't know what business models are, don't know what marketing is. And, you know, we have that. And so it's just going to be an amazing day. Entrepreneurship 101, understanding your why, and that's so important too. A lot of people, again, go into business and don't know what their why. It's just about money. But when you know what your why is, when you're ready to give up or when things aren't going as planned, then you go back to that why, then you won't give up. And so we have a full day of programming that will help people to launch, build, and scale successful businesses.
Most definitely. That's great. And you have a person that came here with you this one of the people to attend the mastermind and do some amazing things. Now she'll get on the, we'll talk about her later. We'll invite her on to one of our shows. She can kind of get in and talk about some things that she's doing, but that's phenomenal. That's great. Now I'm going to ask you, two questions. Number one, I want to know, what is the biggest mistake that you've made in business? And then what is the biggest win?
The biggest mistake I made in business, it's a long story, but I'm going to try to condense it. So I had a salon in Houston, and I was approached by Animal Planet, and they told me that I would get a whole bunch of views if I allowed them to film a segment in my salon. And I contacted my attorney, and I said, I was super excited. I was like, hey, Animal Planet came to the salon, and they said that I would get millions and millions of views. And my attorney said, well, Velma, what type of plot is it going to be? And I said, well, I don't know. I didn't even ask. I just knew that, you know, I was going to get millions of views. And they actually planted bats in my salon, and it was a really high profile salon. And what that did, it was very negative, and it, you know, my salon failed privately, but publicly people didn't know. I was able to sell the model of the brand to one of my Canadian vendors, but the mistake of that was not doing the research and not following the advice of the counsel that I had around me. And so that's definitely one thing. You got to position yourself around people that know more than you, and also be obedient. If they tell you something, you know, you need to follow it.
Yeah, I always tell people all the time, what's the point of having advisors if you don't follow their advice? Right? Like, you got advisors and you still want to do your thing. It's like, okay, well, why am I here? Like, you know, right? And when you told me about that story, I was like, seriously, like, that really happened? It really did happen. Like, bats in the salon. Like, hey, like, you know, looking at Batman, it's like, no, shit, Batgirl, for real, in real life, she out there making it happen. So, yeah, that's amazing. So, tell me the greatest win.
The greatest win is with my client, Fiji. That was really, really a blessing. So we were brought in to just do the marketing of it. There was a brand engagement firm that was actually working on the engagement piece, and then ThinkZilla was going to be the company that just kind of pushed out the information. And when we received their strategy, it wasn't a good strategy. And so they asked that we come in and do the brand engagement piece, and we did. And so we landed that client, and that was truly a win for me, because it allowed us to connect them to other audiences that they were not privy to. And another win is just being able to pour into these women. Like, mm-hmm. that's a win for me. Mm-hmm. Like, Tasha Posey, being able to see her now have four companies mm-hmm. in short of, like, 2 years, mm-hmm. that's a win for me. So mm-hmm. anytime that I'm able to actually pour into these women and be able to create something that's sustainable where we're ending poverty, that is a win for me.
That's right. So I do have a quick question. So how are you able to ask them to look at the strategies that they had? I mean, and they may be asking for RFPs and you're able to say, hey, you know what? This strategy might not be the best strategy for you. How did that work?
So when I got the strategy, I knew that it wasn't going to work, but I said, let me, maybe it's something that I don't know. So we still tried to implement the strategy that they created. Mm-hmm. And then when it was time to do a strategy session, and we were all sitting at the table and I let everyone else talk, and they were trying to figure out what the problem was, and I told them what the problem was. And I said, hey, if you give me 3 weeks, I can show you, I can prove to you that this is the problem. Mm-hmm. And they did that. And so we were able to help them to increase their conversion rates within 3 weeks through the content strategy that we put in place. And at that time, I realized that we were selling ourselves short by just saying that we were a marketing company. So at that time, we redid our entire business model and changed it from a marketing company to a brand engagement firm.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And being specific is so important when you're trying to market yourself out there. How do people get in touch? And Anton did a great job making sure we got that website in there for the Millionaire Mastermind there. How do we get in touch with you? You know, number one, how do we get in touch if we want to work with you on the Thinkzilla side? And then how do we get in touch with you if we want to engage with you on the side with your nonprofit?
Yep. On the Thinkzilla side, our website is thinkzillaconsulting.com. We're on Instagram, Thinkzilla. We're on Twitter and also Facebook, Thinkzilla. That's like Think Like Godzilla, home of the big ideas and great results. And Velma Traham, V-E-L-M-A, T as in Tom, Traham. And I'm on Instagram, Velma_Traham. Facebook, Dr. Velma Traham, and LinkedIn, Dr. Velma Traham.
Yeah, I went to your IG. I like it. You got some good content on there, too. So cool. That's good. So, yeah, listen.
I've got a question for something. I want to know. You said you deal with clients. I'm sorry. You have your own clients and everything, right?
Yes.
How do you deal with clients that aren't OB and that don't listen? What is your kind of strategy for working with them or not working with them?
So I have this thing that, you know, I have to be equally yoked. And I have to be.
So we have no idea what just happened.
I have this thing where I have to be equally yoked. So we don't just take any clients on. If it's a client that I feel that will disrupt my peace, because peace is something that it's super expensive and I cannot afford to lose it. And so we have a very, very strenuous, like, engagement process. You know, we have in-depth strategy, so we kind of get to know who we're going to be dealing with, who the decision makers are, who are the teams that we're going to be dealing with. And from that, because we operate, faith is in my business model. And so if it does not align with my spirit, I cannot do it. And so we're spiritual beings. And so I judge the spirit by the spirit. And so if it doesn't gel, I can't afford it. It's too expensive if it's going to compromise my peace.
Yeah. And I think that's great. Once again, getting back to those fits, you talked about fit, you know, we all talked about fits, and I always try to tell people, I'm like, look, I'm not trying to make something that's not supposed to fit. And guess what? Later on, you're going to have issues because those things, and we get the telltale signs ahead of time, but we still push it forward thinking that, oh, man, I need this check. And you like, hey, what, at the end, you look back and you say, man, you can take the check.
I'll give you extra just to get it. Let me pay you to get away from me.
Just leave
me
alone. Right, but you're already engaged with them, so you're stuck with them. You're stuck, like, the biggest part of my job is dealing with people's
what's the word I'm looking for? Their thoughts on money, you know, like how they grew up affects their mindset and how they view money, you know, whether they have a real spending attitude. A lot of that comes from their childhood and their upbringing. So a lot of that is mitigating it or trying to work around or trying to adapt our financial strategy to it. And sometimes it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. But it sounds good to say you have a financial advisor, XYZ firm. But when you fail, that's also my name and my reputation. But it has nothing to do with me. But, of course, your ego is going to allow you to blame that on me.
But I will say this, you know, and that's the thing. We always have to take responsibility for our own actions. And this is in anything and everything. And and so I've seen it many times. The people who I've seen who've been successful, they've been able to look introspectively at themselves and say, you know what, I got to get better. You know, we're speaking with before the show about how our relationships are so important. But we got to be right first. Right, so, and so, and I think this is when we're going in here. And, you know, I'm glad that we have had an opportunity here today to have some great, great relationships. And we, you know, we got so thick into the conversation and talking about this. This might actually be one of our longer shows. And so I let it go because it flowed and it was good. And we've been in here. And so y'all getting some good content, some good information. And what I want to say is thank you guys, for all of you wonderful people, for coming on and being here with us. And y'all have been able to share some great nuggets and provide some great insight for us in here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. And can I possibly say one thing just to touch on what she talked about when it comes to the spirit?
Go for it.
And I've kind of been listening to this and listening to God say this. In Psalms 23, he said he'll prepare a table in the presence of your enemies. So that means that your enemy is going to sit at the table while God is blessing you.
That's right.
So don't be afraid to sit at the table, because I think a lot of times we get distracted by what's going on the outside. And that could be family. That could be whatever issues going on. But the blessing can't come if the families distract you to walk away from the table that you're supposed to be blessed at. Mm-hmm. You need to stay at the table, because the enemy you should not be fearful of, because they have to sit there in order for you to receive the blessing. He says, I've already prepared an audience for you. So why are you looking for an audience when I've already created one to bless you in front of?
That, hey, and on that note, look, we're about to go to church. And wow. Hey, he about to say,
where's that tray at? I gotta go.
I'm looking for my fans.
Hey, look, we was in here about to go to church. D, take us out here for
I don't think you give yourself enough credit. I mean,
that's so true.
You're one of those abundant people of abundance. You know, you're actually here. You brought people together where most people would not offer people a platform and try to keep whatever resources they have, or only bring in people that would benefit them in a strategic or tactical way. So just the fact that you just reached out to me, hey, you want to do this? I got some great people I think you should meet. I think you got a good story to share. Like, you didn't even ask me anything about the markets or none of the other stuff I talk about, which is perfect.
Yeah.
I just think you're a good guy.
Well, I appreciate it, man. You know, I'm all with relationship people, and I genuinely like people. And I think, you know, I think that's one thing. If you don't like people, people know, like, they don't like people.
I'm starting not to.
You
know? But, I'm serious.
Yeah, no, look. And like I said, you know, there are some people that be like, hey, you know what, let me
supposed to say away
yeah,
from,
yeah,
right?
No, and we rethink it, you know. But that's right. My mom always told me, she said, JR, she said, don't let nobody ever change you. And that's the thing. So
Dr. Merriweather and I were talking earlier. Yeah. So this city, Atlanta, is not a crab in a barrel city. And none of us are from here. So,
right.
You know, in any other city, they're trying to pull you down, trying to stop you from climbing. This city, people will attach their key to your kite.
Oh,
come on.
Ride it as high as they can. As soon as they get high enough and see another kite that's going a little bit higher, a little bit quicker.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll jump kite to kite. They're kite jumpers.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Hey, no. Look, you don't got us on a whole other thing.
That's a whole other segment.
We're going to be here for another hour and a half just talking about that. So on that note, D.
We got
to
finish that.
D, take us out. Thank y'all so much.
Oh, wait, that's another segment right there. That part right there.